Our next matter, Dynalectrics Company versus Clark and Sullivan. While the parties are setting up, I would just note for our record that Justice Pickering has voluntarily reclused as to this matter because of prior association. If parties are ready, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and how you wish to allocate your time, if that's appropriate.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Aki Levin and I represent the appellant Dynalectric Company of Nevada, and I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you.
This appeal has had some history, and given this history, we are thankful to have the opportunity to address the entire court today and to explain to you why it is that, on the record facts, the judgment below was contrary to law and should be reversed. We're asking for a reversal because the district court enforced a promise that Dynalectric did not make. Dynalectric was invited by Clark and Sullivan to submit a bid on the UMC project, and it submitted a $7.9 million bid based on the terms and conditions of the bid documents, which provided for an 819-day duration. That translates into a 27-month duration. It is on these terms that this bid was submitted. Clark and Sullivan never accepted Dynalectric's bid on its terms. Instead, what it did post-award, it submitted a letter of intent and a proposed subcontract expressly requesting that Dynalectric accept a project duration that was 7 months longer than the bid on which it was made, at no additional compensation.
Was that ever indicated that there would be no additional compensation?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the letter of intent, it's the October 8 letter. Clark and Sullivan asks Dynalectric, there is no price, there is no scope of work. All that letter of intent asks us to accept, here's the construction date, here's the end date. Please indicate your acceptance.
Counsel, if I understand the facts, one of the things that was done by Clark and Sullivan, I understand, in the process, when they received the bid from Dynalectrics, because of the amount of the bid, they double-checked the bid specs, because at that point there was some concern, at least, and I use that term, by the parties about the number of days the contract would be for, but neither party was aware that the number of days would be increased when this bid was originally made. Is that a correct assumption?
That is correct, Your Honor. But this is why this is important. The duration, it was an important term of the contract. Time was of the essence. It provided for 890 days. On July the 8th, the contractors had their last pre-bid meeting. Everyone appeared at that meeting, including Clark and Sullivan, who in 2002 helped set this duration. It was very familiar with the duration, raised no concerns. However, 2 days before bid day, it called UMC's architect and it said, you know what? And it should have put in a request for information 2 weeks earlier, in fact, 3 weeks earlier. But it called 2 days before bidding, and it said, you know, we looked at these scope of work by the bid documents, and we have a concern. We believe that the 27 months is inadequate, those were the words, inadequate to perform the work requested. We believe this is requiring 33 months. And as a result, they obtained UMC's permission to negotiate post-award an additional duration, for a longer period of time. Consequently, they bid on a 33-month project and included, compensated themselves $600,000 to make up for that difference. They didn't share that information with Dyna Electric or none of the other bidders who were bidding on the project. As a result, Dyna Electric could not compute a bid, and this is why this is a public policy issue, because the general contractors and the subcontractors should be put on equal footing. It was not done here.
Mr. Lynn, I'm a little confused by the date here. Maybe you can clarify this. I'm told that on August the 10th, Kaluuya, however you pronounce that, sent a letter that referenced the fact that 33 months were needed instead of 27 months. And that McElhon, however you pronounce that name, indicated that that was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And then Dyna submits its bid for $7.9 million on August the 11th. Did the $7.9 million contemplate a 33-month or a 27-month completion date?
It contemplated a 27-month completion date. It was based on the bid documents that were at a 27-month duration. Uh-huh. But it is the 30-month duration that Clark and Sullivan tried to bind Dyna Electric to post-award. And so it sought Dyna Electric's acceptance at the same bid price to gather and man up this project for 7 months more at no additional compensation.
Well, isn't it true that in subsequent negotiations between the parties, there was testimony from Sutton and one other individual that Dyna would be compensated to the tune of $500,000 for the extended duration of the project to 1,023 days?
No, Your Honor, that where that comes from, that the $500,000.
Well, no, isn't that what Sutton and Bradley testified to?
No, that is not it. Ms. Bradley testified that had she known that this project was going to be extended another 7 months, she would have added another $500,000 in the bid to compensate Dyna Electric for labor increases, overhead, material costs, and the like. So it is Dyna Electric was never told about this extra duration, but the record is crystal clear that Clark and Sullivan, from the moment that it invited bids, and this goes back to...
I still don't understand this from a practical standpoint. Why would Dyna Electric submit a bid for $7.9 million on the day following the date that they raised the question? It should be 33 days instead of 27 months. Why would you submit a bid the next day for $7.9 million consistent with UMC specifications for 27 months when you know that you can't do it in under 33 months?
Dyna Electric was not part of that conversation. Dyna Electric was left in the dark just like every other bidder. This conversation took place between Clark and Sullivan and UMC's architect. It was an ex parte conversation that was not shared with the bidders.
So, counsel, you're suggesting that the record in this case would support an indication that at no time were your clients ever made aware of the change or the expected change in duration and therefore the related scope of work.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And this, of course, was tested in the district court at trial as to whether or not, I mean, certainly adequate testimony would have been taken.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But Ms. Levin, your answer still doesn't address common sense. Dyna Electric knew it couldn't do the job for under 33 months.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It is Clark and Sullivan, as the general contractor, who knew the job could not be done in 33 months. It is Clark and Sullivan who called UMC and said it cannot be done. Dyna Electric was a bidding subcontractor, was not part of that conversation. It was not informed. So as a result, Dyna Electric, and this is undisputed, this is a finding of fact by the court, Dyna Electric, in the dark, based its bid squarely on the bid documents. It had to acknowledge them, and the court made a finding of fact. and said, you bid on an 819-day duration, and we did. The conversation was never shared with us. And as a result, that what happened post-award, Clark and Sullivan already knew the scope was different, but UMC said, well, you know what, we need to get this project bidded out now. We need to go. We have no time to issue a bid addendum. We can't do it. Let's just go ahead and bid it out. We'll deal with this later. But they never dealt with this with Dynalectric. So when Clark and Sullivan called Dynalectric and said, is this bid good? It never verified with Dynalectric. Is this bid still good if we're going to extend the duration by 7 months? At that point, they didn't ask.
Was Dynalectric, excuse me for interrupting your thought, was Dynalectric ever given a reasonable opportunity to respond to the change in the scope?
It wasn't because it was not.
Ever?
No, it wasn't because it was not told. It was presented a letter of intent. Here's the construction begin date. Here's the construction end date. And could you sign here below and indicate your acceptance? The proposed subcontract, I see my time is up. Can I quickly
finish? Go ahead
and finish,
please.
The proposed subcontract had the different duration, has a 34-month duration. The letter of intent had a 34-month duration. The scope of work it was submitted had a 34-month duration. It was never, nobody said to Dynalectric, hey, by the way, this is what we want you to accept. It was imposed on it, but we never accepted it. It was a counteroffer as a matter of law.
Ms. Levin, were the other 42 subcontracts amended to extend the completion period for them? My understanding is there are 43 subcontractors here.
Correct.
The standard form subcontract was sent out to everybody. Were the other 42 contracts amended to reflect the extended completion date?
I'm aware of, in the record, of the contractor who replaced Dynalectric, yes, Helix.
I'm talking about the original 42 subcontracts.
They
were their subcontracts modified to reflect the change in duration of the project?
It's my understanding they were, Your Honor, and each received the same letter of intent with the extended duration and accepted it.
And that was not tendered to you?
We received the letter of intent. We've never accepted that change in duration.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice Douglas. Distinguished Justices of the Court personnel, Ms. Levin and Mr. Dabney, and I'm Bill McGrath. I'm the attorney who was the trial counsel at the trial for Clark and Sullivan. I'm here with Mr. B.J. Sullivan from Clark and Sullivan, Mr. Kevin Stroop from Clark and Sullivan. Mr. Sullivan's wife also works at Clark and Sullivan. I'll get right to this first issue, which has come up, and I want to point it out quickly because there's a lot of other issues I'd like to discuss. There was no change in duration of this contract. The contract that the University Medical Center specification said, 819 days. Clark and Sullivan thought, gee, you know, that seems a little short. So they talked to the architect about it and said, maybe we'll talk about that later. But when the project bid, everybody bid 819 days, including Clark and Sullivan. When the project contract was let, the contract was for 819 days. And Judge Denton, this entire argument was presented at trial, and Judge Denton discussed it in finding of fact 56 and said, however, no addenda altered the requirement that the contract be performed in 819 days. All general contractors, including Clark and Sullivan, bid on 819 days. There was never a change order issued to make it beyond 819 days until 6 months later when the University Medical Center said, we want you to do a bunch of new, more work. And when that occurred, there was a change order issued because the scope expanded.
Let's back up just for a second. There's a letter that was placed in the record, a letter that would confirm a conversation of Tuesday, August 9th, 2009, the concern was raised, and then a response back. Your response to this was that you had expected this to be a problem, the duration, and that it was acceptable to the owner to negotiate the duration of the project after award. Was that information prior to the bid by Dynaelectrics, or was it after this conversation?
This conversation occurred because Clark and Sullivan, in working as one of many bidding contractors, worked with the owner.
I understand why. The question was when, based upon, and when did they bid?
It was not discussed with Dynaelectric or any contractor, because in public works bidding, Clark and Sullivan cannot create chaos in the bidding process. Imagine if a contractor before bid day comes out and says, all subcontractors, watch out, we think this job will take longer than the specifications will take. If that occurs, add money to your bids. The public owner would be outraged and would disqualify Clark and Sullivan for making such a public announcement and, in effect, creating that calamity, because everybody's bid would go up if somebody were to claim that. Instead, as honestly, I urge you to look at finding of fact number 56 and finding of fact number 138. The judge discussed this and found there was no such agreement. Although the letter's there, nothing changed the requirements. The contract Clark and Sullivan signed was for 819 days. And therefore, everybody bid according to 819 days. Dynaelectric did. And Clark and Sullivan said, in effect, if Dynaelectric had ever raised this issue, they would have been entitled to additional compensation if it went beyond 819 days. Dynaelectric never brought it up. Mr. Sutton and Ms. Bradley never, ever raised this issue. Mr. McCormick never raised this issue. And as a result, it never occurred.
Moreover, counsel, I am concerned as to whether or not the suggestion being made by the appellant in this case is that there was some violation of the statute, i.e. that you were bid shopping. What you're suggesting is that, in fact, the bid that your client made was 819.
Correct.
All of the subcontractors' bids similarly would have been based on that 819 days.
Absolutely.
And subsequent thereto, when the duration of the contract change, whether it was for weather delays or because someone underestimated the scope of it initially, the fact of the matter is that presumably adjustments would have been made, as apparently testimony supported, to encompass those additional days.
Absolutely. Every contractor under Nevada's prompt pay statute, NRS 624-628, is entitled to additional damages if a delay occurs that is not their responsibility. Any one of them could have claimed against Clark and Sullivan for the delay. And in fact, when delays occurred in this case, those claims were made by subcontractors, and Dynaelectric could have done it. Dynaelectric was only asked to sign a contract for 819 days and urged to sign it because that's all we could ask them to do. Everybody bid 819 days. Our prime contract was 819 days. And except for the extraordinary change which occurred later, which gave us an extension of time and presumably gave every subcontractor that claim for additional damages, under those circumstances, everybody was on the same boat. Everybody had that same right because everybody bid the same specs. And in this particular case, Judge Denton thoroughly reviewed this.
It's a fact.
155 pages of an order. And we know.
It's
we know.
In there. We're all district court judges. You all remember what it was like to sit in front of construction cases and listen to those wonderful, juicy facts as they come out from the witnesses. Judge Denton heard this. He has addressed that specific issue in the findings. I urge you to look at it. You'll see that he says, exactly as Justice just said, it was 819 days. Everybody went with 819 days. And Dynaelectric has no argument. Plus, they never raised it. They never raised it because they didn't want to do this job.
Did you give them an opportunity prior to substituting another subcontractor to comply or to meet reasonable terms and conditions under the contract?
We offered them the contract as they had bid it. They refused to talk to us any further. After December 3rd, they simply said no. But before they did that, they changed their position. They said, here's our bid, which is the bid that they supplied to us. Here's our bid, but they said, oh, by the way, we're not going to give you a warranty. $7.9 million worth of work But we're not going to agree to a warranty, even though Clark and Sullivan, you have to provide a one-year warranty to the state. Oh, by the way, Clark and Sullivan, we forgot to tell you, we want 10% upfront as a mobilization fee, even though they have never asked for that in any other contract. They asked for it here. And the reason they asked for it here is because the big boss back east, Mr. Perry, who's an officer of Appellant Corporation, Mr. Perry, a vice president of Dynalectric of Nevada, said, we don't build hospitals. We build casinos. And he told the president of Dynalectric, you had no business bidding that job. And the president of Dynalectric came over to Clark and Sullivan and said, I've been told to get out of this subcontract. Or is exactly, do whatever he could to get out of the contract. That's in the record. That's the testimony of the president of the company. And the president of the company was so upset when the big boss back east said, get out of the contract, he quit his job. 29 years, the president quit. So when the president quits, the new vice president, the vice president, the outside counsel back east comes out and starts writing these letters with incredible demands on Clark and Sullivan. Imagine a $7.9 million contract without a warranty.
Mr. McGrath?
Yes.
I'd like to turn your attention to a slightly different area of this case. Were all of the other subcontractors afforded an increase or a change order for the extended completion time?
All of the other subcontractors were informed that the new date that Clark and Sullivan was aiming for was the later date, and all were afforded an opportunity to make a claim if they chose to.
Okay.
And none of them did.
Okay. But that leads to my question about damages. It appears that the court's measure of damages on the promissory estoppel conclusion was based on a comparison of the amount paid by Clark and Sullivan to complete the work, $10,310,000 and some change, against Dynalectric's bid of $7,808,000. That looks to me like there was an oversight of a $500,000 credit that Dynalectric would have been entitled to if the duration period had been extended. Was there an error by the district court judge in calculating damages in this case by $500,000? That's my first question. And my second question is, on the other side of the coin, the judge assessed prejudgment interest by dividing these damages between past and future when, on the surface, they look to me like all past damages. Even though they may not have been spent yet, they were incurred, so prejudgment interest should have been assessed against both.
Thank you. At the time Dynalectric walked off the job on December 3rd, 2004, Clark and Sullivan immediately began, under the statute, finding three additional bids and three additional subcontractors. Helix was the low bid. We then offered Dynalectric the opportunity, knowing that there was going to be a $2 million bust, to come back and do the job. They still refused to do it. Mm-hmm. We think it's because the boss said not to do it. But in answer to your question, Helix then bid the same exact specifications because the prime contract was still 819 days. And that's when Clark and Sullivan had to have the job done. So the substitute subcontractor still had to finish when the rest of the contractors did and Clark and Sullivan did. That all occurred in December. There was no change order. Now, eventually, Helix did agree to go ahead and sign a subcontract for an extended period of time and could have made a claim for an additional amount of time. But under the circumstances, Helix was still required to complete in 819 days, as everyone did, until about 8 months later when an off-site electrical change occurred and an additional 6 months was added to the contract.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to clarify whether the $10,310,000 used by the court was the figure paid based upon the modified completion date to finish the work, or whether it was based upon an 819-day completion work, because it would seem like one of the issues on appeal is whether substantial evidence supports the damage award here, and I'm trying to understand the math.
In answer to your question, at the time Dynalectric left the job and Helix was subcontracted, I think the subcontract for Helix is dated March 22nd. At that time, there had been no change in the duration.
And that's 9-6.
Pardon?
The Helix contract, I think, is 9-6. 9,000,006.
No, no. The Helix subcontract was signed, is dated March 22nd, 2004.
For 9,600,000.
For 9,600,000, correct.
Right. And the damage amount that was used here was 10,310.
And that's because because before we could get Helix to do the work, we had to work on a parking lot while we were still negotiating. So Choice Construction did $250,000 worth of work. Helix did $9.6 million worth of work. And Helix bid had excluded certain items on an environmental system, and High-Tech Electric, as the court found, was required to fill in those. It took three contractors to do what Dynalectric had agreed to do, the total being $10.4 million, the number Your Honor quotes from.
And all of those numbers represent a duration of 819 days, not 1,023 days.
My understanding is at the time those subcontracts were signed, the duration was the same. Now, I believe that the schedule that was attached to the Helix contract was for longer. I believe that's
the what it looked like to me.
Pardon?
That's what it looked like to me.
And therefore, there was no evidence presented, and counsel was certainly prepared, took the deposition of Mr. Fuchs from Helix Electric. No evidence was presented that was for a longer period of time at trial. And as a result, the judge found, based on, there was no damage evidence presented by Dynalectric. The judge found that there was no duplication, that the three subcontractors did exactly what Dynalectric had agreed to do in its bid, and Clark and Sullivan was out $2.5 million, and that was the cost. In answer to your prejudgment interest question, Judge Denton went ahead and applied the Albios decision of this court and concluded that since the breach of the promissory estoppel obligation occurred on December 3rd. That was before the complaint was filed. Clark and Sullivan was therefore obligated to find substitute subcontractors, got the approval of the owner, did, and that damage occurred at the time they left the project, and therefore it was $1.66 million worth of damages that had been paid by Clark and Sullivan as of the date of trial. At the time of the trial, the project wasn't done. And therefore, the judge says, since you're going to be paying $800,000 in the future, I'm going to make a finding that that's future damages. Therefore, you're not entitled to prejudgment interest on future money beyond trial. That'll be after the judgment. And so that's why the court made that distinction. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. In conclusion, as I narrow this down, I know you've had extra questions. I'm prepared to argue four more hours here. I won't do that to you. I did that to Judge Denton. And all I would ask you to do is, if you haven't had the opportunity, I know you're very busy, this is step by step a thorough analysis of everything. When it comes to questions of fact, who's telling the truth, who's not, look at it. Look at finding of fact number 96. He carefully analyzed the evidence and concluded that Clark and Sullivan should prevail in this case. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chief, can I ask one question? I would like to go back to something that was indicated earlier on the letter of intent. I'm trying to understand that a little bit better. Ms. Levin indicated that the 33-month completion date was indicated in the letter of intent, and that in their minds was a material change.
The answer to the question is, there's a 60-day window for the University Medical Center to accept the contract. On the 55th day, they accepted it. And that was on a Wednesday. And Clark and Sullivan on a Friday sent out a letter of intent to everybody that said, all of which said, TBD, meaning to be determined, because they just wanted to let everyone know the contract had been awarded, let's get going, let's get the subcontracts out. And in a public bidding scenario, Clark and Sullivan has to be able to do that. And they had a duration there. And Mr. Kaluuya testified on the record that that was a mistake in the date in the letter of intent. It wasn't a counteroffer. It wasn't a change. It was a mistake. And had Dynalectric come to Clark and Sullivan, as Mr. Kaluuya testified and Mr. Schlosser said, the bottom line is Clark and Sullivan would have given them a contract for 819 days. And if there was one day beyond that, they'd be entitled to damages under the subcontract as found by Judge Denton.
Got it.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, if you'd, we took up some of counsel's time, if you'd give her the full 5 minutes she'd asked for.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to address a few key points here. That it is true that our bids were based on an 890 days, but the point is that Clark and Sullivan tried to impose a different contract on us with a 34-month duration at no additional compensation. Mr. McGrath talks about the scope of work. He admits it. 6 months later, we changed this project. But you asked a question, Mr. Chief Justice. When did you make that phone call? And he made that phone call. Clark and Sullivan made that phone call 2 days before bidding. There was no weather delay on August the 9th because the project had not started. And we have the testimony. We put this in the appendix. The concern was based on the four corners of the bid documents as they existed on bid day. And we have the testimony of Mr. Kaluuya, who testified that. Mr. Schlosser said, we didn't know about the change order that was going to come 6 months later because, and Mr. McElhone said, it was not until January 2005 that we were told we're going to do, that we were giving them an additional scope of work. It had nothing to do with the change order. It was on the four corners of this bid, and that's
important. Wouldn't you have been entitled to delay damages in any event? Isn't that the standard in the industry if your project runs beyond the termination date?
But if the project changes as a result of a change order. Here, from day one, Clark and Sullivan said, we believe this is a longer project, but you still have to perform the
everybody
same.
Everybody bid it at 819 days.
But the contract that Clark and Sullivan tried to impose had a duration of 34 months. Now, Mr. McGrath said, I think it's a mistake, but there was no mistake when Mr. Kaluuya picked up the phone on August 9th. There was no mistake when he confirmed the conversation by letter. There is no mistake. The construction cost report, that's Exhibit 89, has a duration of 34 months. This is before the weather delays. Remember, we're still in August here. The letter of intent has a 34-month duration. That's Exhibit 98. It's included in our appendix. The scope of work has a 34-month duration. Remember, we're still 5 months before that different work, the offsite that they tried to keep this on.
What about Mr. McGrath's statement that the local Dynalectric officer said, I've been told to get out of this contract, we build casinos, and he was told by his principal back east that we build casinos, not hospitals. Is that in the record?
That is in the record, Your Honor. But, you know, nobody has a legal obligation to accept a counteroffer. Motive is irrelevant. If you have a right, if somebody gives you a counteroffer, you don't have an obligation to reject it in good faith. And that's their argument. It's legally irrelevant. And the argument with respect to get out of this contract, subcontract, which is based on complete hearsay, which we also pointed out in our briefs, that was at the time the parties were value engineering in August before the award came through. So it is in that context, and this is in the testimony, that we said, we're going to be, if you want to, because remember, they wanted to change the scope of work with cost reductions in August. And it's at that point he said, well, if you want us to change this work, we're going to be very tough on terms and condition. There was no subcontract to talk about in August because it wasn't at issue at that time.
What about the warranty statement that Mr. McGrath said that Dynalectric was not willing to give the one-year warranty?
That is one of the points of arguments that the parties were going back and forth in their negotiations. Again, we had no... They make us a counteroffer, we can, at that point in time, everyone was starting to negotiate based on the terms that each party wanted. But I wanted to say one more thing. The proposed subcontract that we were given on November 10th, that they call a form contract that has every ring and whistle on it, including the schedule, it had, again, a 34-month duration. There was no additional compensation. This wasn't a change order. This was a different material term that they imposed from day one, and they knew they were going to impose it.
Counsel, as this material term, my understanding is that all the other subcontractors signed off as to those terms. The Dynalectric was the only one who was throwing out that they would not, were not willing to comply with those terms in this, as you phrased it, negotiation.
Can I answer the question, Your Honor? Remember, Dynalectric wasn't the doorknob contractor. Dynalectric was going to be on this project for the entire duration. But the
and I don't think they were by themselves. There were other subs who would be on for the entire duration also.
Correct. But Dynalectric, the materiality of the duration is undisputed. We have all the testimony of every witness who says that the duration is a material term. And Dynalectric said, if we had known that we you're going to hold us to a contract of 34 months, we would have put an additional $500,000 on this bid, but we were never given the opportunity to do so. I hope this answers your question.
Thank you, counsel, for the argument. We appreciate the argument of both counsel this day. This is interesting. We have some areas that have not been touched by the state court before. We will see what we will do with this. This matter stands submitted this day. Thank you.